Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm sorry I usually sound a little more serious when I start, but this time I didn't. One of my guests decided to be funny just before we went on the air, and we'll deal with that later. Anyway, okay. This is off to a fascinating start. We're going to talk about kids today. But anyway, our goal is to bring you credible, valid, and informative information and insights about diverse members of our community. This is Central Coast Voices, if I didn't specifically say that. And I'm Fred Monroe. We want to address today's choices and how they affect tomorrow's community and how we look at long-term ramifications of change and fluctuation, for lack of a better word, in our society, because people have reminded me it's not always change, it's just fluctuation, meaning you go some direction and decide not to stay there and go back. And so we look at a lot of things in our society. We're glad that you're with us. This is going to be a fascinating hour. We hope that you can join us with. It is a call-in program if you would like. The phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. The number doesn't change, so if you store it in your phone or your cell phone, you can chat with us whenever you want. And I'll encourage you to do that early in the program, because sometimes those of you who want to call in and talk about things wait till the last 5 or 6 minutes, and we just kind of run out of time. We're going to talk today about something that should always be a light and delightful subject, and that is kids, or children, or whatever word you want to use for young people who are in the learning stages of their life. And basically, research shows that about 80% of children's brain development takes place in the first 3 years of your life, their life. And it is really fascinating when you think about it, because we would think there are so many things that we've learned about after we were three that it wouldn't be that much stuff. But when we think about what we had to learn before we were three, it really affects a lot of how we look at things. So we're going to talk today about children's speech and talking with children, how kids learn, how kids hear and listen, and how they listen to talk, how they listen to music, how they sing, how they read, and how we read to them. And it's going to be a great, fun topic. And I have to tell you, I'm looking forward to this, because I'm going to learn a lot about the fact, because I have a 5-month-old granddaughter who is my first granddaughter. And it's going to be fascinating. And I'll get into that as a side later on. Okay, my guests today are Misty Livengood. She's the Communications and Outreach Officer for the First Five of San Luis Obispo County, which is the County Children's and Family Commission. Margaret Kinsinger Klopfer. Okay. And she's the Youth Services Coordinator Librarian with the San Luis Obispo County Library System. And then Heidi Harmon, who is an early childhood educator and music teacher, and one who likes to try and make me laugh before the program starts, so I won't have a straight face when we start. There's so much to cover with this, and we're going to have such a good time, but I'm really stuck on the 80% of what children learn, they learn in the first 3 years of life. 90% of what they learn is in the first 5 years of life. And how we read to them, talk to them, and communicate with them is like somehow a magic issue, because I'm thoroughly convinced that my granddaughter can't understand a word I'm saying, but I still talk to her for 2 hours on end. Jump into it.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. I think that's one of the most common misconceptions we have with how brains develop, is that if we are not getting a response that matches our input, that there's nothing going on.
Okay, for clarification, this is Margaret speaking.
Hi.
And Margaret's from First Five, because
I'm from the public library.
I
like First Five, okay. Though. We're partners.
Okay.
Indeed.
Yeah, okay. I'm with the public library. And what I like to think of is, when you talk, read, sing, and I always add, and play, with your babies and young children, it's kind of like laying a foundation for a house. Sometimes people think, oh, well, when they go to school, that's when they're kind of building their brains and building their educational resources. But that's actually the part where you're constructing the house. You have to have a good foundation first. So when children are very young, what we're hoping that parents will do is lay that foundation. They're getting those brains ready to later talk, to later read, to later sing on their own. But that can only happen if it starts out with parents doing it with their children at a very young age.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot for a topic that I believe you may not be versed in, but if we're maybe lucky that you are.
Okay.
And that is, when a child is born,
yes,
and they start hearing things for the first time,
yeah,
Is there any kind of indication at all as to how their brain is processing stuff?
I am so glad you asked me that. Actually, babies' brains, they can even show response before they are born in late development. And they've actually done neural testing on children where they can actually look at the firing of neural dendrites. Okay, so these are the connections between one brain cell and the other. And what they found is that with very young children, the density of their brains actually increases with increased talk, contact, singing, reading to them, and they can actually measure babies' brains to see the differences between children who are talked to, read to, and sung to with babies who are not.
I have to laugh for a second because the concept of telling me that density somehow is good because people just when I was a kid just told me I was dense.
Well, yeah, and that's a good point. Actually, your brain develops by making these connections, and the more they make those connections, the stronger the connections are between brain cells. So when we're talking about density, we're not actually talking about the physical density of the brain. We're talking about the density of the connections between the different brain cells. Okay, so you're actually making your brain cells richer and stronger.
So how full my hard drive is.
Yes, that's right. Alrighty. That's right.
Misty, jump in.
Yeah, well, okay. I wanted to mimic that and just say that, you know, First Five California, the Talk, Read, Sing campaign is simply about that. And there's a specific name for that kind of communication. It's serve and return. And so when you are talking to your baby, when you're showing eye contact to your baby, you're hugging your baby, you're smiling, you're showing animation, expressiveness, those neural connections in that baby's brain are being strengthened and built. And then that is what leads to the communications and social skills, the development of cognitive skills. Okay. So
I have to insert this because my daughter who lives in San Jose, I'm going to make her listen to the tape of the program later on. My granddaughter was born back in February. My first time with my granddaughter was in the hospital, and I basically sat for about 2 hours while the baby was just sitting there looking at me and talked. And my daughter said to her mom, and like, okay, why is dad just talking to this baby constantly? And actually Sharon's response was, my wife was, because that's what your father does. He just talks, okay? But the reality is just talking to this child and engaging with them indeed makes a difference. It's not just to make me happy that I'm looking at a smiling grandchild.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And it's much like if you envision a tennis match or a ping pong game. That's exactly what you want to be doing with your child right out of the womb.
Ping pong. Okay.
Yeah. And imagine the idea. Okay. Imagine this idea of saying a word that you've never heard before, right? Imagine the idea of being able to speak a language that you've never heard before. These language development areas of your brain are happening when you're very young. And if children don't get that when they're very young, those areas aren't developed enough to return it. You wouldn't be able to walk into a country where you've never heard the language before and suddenly being able to speak it. So the same thing even happens in our native language. We need to hear that language in order to develop the facility to use it ourselves.
Okay, so why are we having this conversation? Shouldn't everybody know this and just want to talk to children?
Yes, that's a great point.
Or read to children.
Yeah.
Or sing with children.
Yeah, that's a great point.
One would think, I just want to reiterate, I think part of the issue that we have today is we want to believe that we're doing that on a regular basis, but when you look at daily schedules, when you look at crazy life schedules, when you look at daily distractions, when you look at technology, and we're just trying to find time to fit it in during the day, I think sometimes we just need to be reminded and encouraged to really look for those everyday moments and turn them into enriching and fun learning experiences with our children.
Okay, we're going to have fun with things that we can argue about here a little
okay,
bit today.
Well,
it occurred to me that I could say to you, and I, by the way, I don't believe this, but I believe people could say it to you, and that is, well, gee whiz, isn't it just easier? I've got my day's really busy. I don't have a whole lot of time. I'm just going to turn on the television set and let the baby sit and watch the TV set, and life will be grand because Bob Barker will talk to them on the television or whatever. I know Bob Barker's not even on the television anymore. But I mean, how do we break that cycle of, oh, if any talking is wonderful, I'm just going to leave my child to look at the television set all day long?
Because that's a really passive way of getting communication. There's probably some measurable benefits to watching good quality television. I think Sesame Street's really
shown that. This is Heidi Harmon now. Mm-hmm. We didn't introduce people as well as we should have. I apologize.
That's okay. So I'm the music person, so this is not necessarily my area of expertise, but I can just tell from my own personal experience as a mother, too. We didn't have television or technology in my house as I was raising my kids. So we did a lot of one-on-one engagement, a lot of communication, a lot of talking, and that level of communication where you have, first of all, eye contact. And And honestly, love, right? I mean, that's a huge part of what's going on here. So we're talking about the intellectual benefits, the literacy benefits, the cognitive benefits, but all of that is undergirded by the love also. So when you're talking about building that foundation, you're also talking about building that sense of security, emotional and physical security that a baby and a young child gets when feeling truly loved, heard, and connected to. So that's another word that we should bring into this conversation is that connection. And we know the difference between even talking with someone on the phone, texting, or being really in the same space, having a conversation. Those are huge differences. And each has its positives and some benefits, but there's nothing like having a one-on-one conversation with someone as an adult. And so you can only imagine the difference between plopping a kid in front of a television, which I'm not saying, you know, you have sometimes those things are necessary, but really reminding people the science that they were just sharing, I think really helps to maybe inspire folks to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to take that extra 15 minutes today and just communicate with my baby or my child or read or maybe sing with them to take it to the next level.
Where does singing fit in this? By the way, yeah, that question is being asked by someone who is often asked not to sing.
We're asking everyone to sing. Okay. Babies and toddlers are great audiences because they are not judgmental at all. They don't know if you're a bad singer, so don't worry about that.
They could wince on the flats.
Yeah. Well, you know, having had this music program myself for about 20 years, I started it. I was a preschool teacher. I started this program at Boo Boo Records, and I would definitely not say I was coming at it from a early childhood, young mother sort of place, definitely not a professional singer place at all. And as she was saying, you know, kids don't care. They don't know. And especially when you're their parent, you know, you can kind of do no wrong, really, when it comes to things like that. And it adds in that element that you brought up about play.
Wait till they're seven.
Well, right. So that's why under five is even better because you're in that magic window of being able to do no wrong. And singing, I think, it's pretty easy to add into even a busy schedule, which is maybe one of the things that it has. You know, reading is a little bit trickier, right? You have to take the space and the time to sit down and read. But you can add singing into your life as you're traveling, you know, in the car or as you're doing other things, even on a walk or even in the store, you know, like these just little moments where adding in some of these songs can really not only, you know, it's fun, first of all, but they have cognitive ramifications that are really positive.
Yeah. And if you don't mind if I jump in, this is Margaret from the Public Library. And the reason why I think that this campaign is interesting is it talks about talking, reading, and singing. Each of those things does something different to a baby's brain. So I'll just talk about that really quickly. When you talk with a baby as opposed to putting them in front of a TV, you are getting what Misty was talking about before, that taking turns, that tuning in, that reciprocity. When you say something to a baby and they smile at you, that's your response. They're listening and they're responding to you, which you don't get from television. The television doesn't respond to the baby and vice versa. Second of all, when you're singing with a child, it actually goes into a different part of their brain. When they do studies of people with Alzheimer's, for example, mm-hmm. one of the last things that they learn or lose is song, because it goes into a deeper part of our brain than conversation does, which is why when you say the ABCs, children don't learn it as quickly as when they sing the ABCs. We are learning with a different part of our brain when we sing, and we naturally slow down our cadence and pronounce things more differently, rhyming, words, when we're singing. And then the reading component of it sometimes can be a challenge too. People say, well, my baby's not paying attention. Do I need to read? My baby doesn't like the books. And I think one of the things that's a little confusing is we're not asking you to sit down and read War and Peace with your child from start to finish. They're going to grab that book. They're going to try to eat that book. They're going to want to turn the pages themselves. But it's a shared experience. And when you read to children, you naturally have a vocabulary that you use in conversation. Reading books to children adds a different level of vocabulary. It adds words that you might not normally have in your conversation with children. So it actually gives them a richer, stronger vocabulary because it's introducing words that are not always part of our regular speech.
Yeah. Let me remind you, this is a program we'd like you to be part of the discussion with, too, if you'd like. And the phone number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. If you're just joining us now, we're basically talking about reading, talking, and singing with little children and how it affects their development. And it's a fascinating topic, and we'd like you to be part of the discussion. It may affect what you do with your children. It may be something that you're involved in some other way that you'd like to share with us. So this isn't just about you calling in with questions, but calling in with observations also. Phone number is 781-3875. This is, of course, Central Coast Voices, and I'm glad you're joining us today. This is Public Radio KCBX, and you are our public. We would like you to be part of this discussion. You said, okay, don't read your baby. Well, you didn't say you don't need to read War and Peace, okay, right. Or you may not want to read War and Peace. It occurred to me as you were saying that, though, if I'm dealing with a very little child, okay,
yes.
My now five-month-old grandchild,
yes.
Okay, it probably doesn't matter what I read to them.
That's a good point. Yes. So I think that there's two different types of reading you could do with your children. You can share the experience of reading what you're reading to expose them to vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And then also when they reach a certain age, you'll be able to share kind of the meaning of those words with them. So when you find books that are targeted toward young babies, they're going to be a lot simpler. A lot of times they'll have picture cues to kind of tell them what the words mean. Mm-hmm. And so when you do get books that are targeted toward 0 to 3-year-olds, they'll kind of cater themselves more so that the babies can be part of that interactive activity. I even think of reading to babies at that age as playful. They'll want to, again, if it's a board book, they can grab the book. They can taste the book. You can talk about turning the pages with the book. But also you can point to a picture of dog and say dog. And now they're making that connection with a picture too. So it's a little different.
Okay.
And I'd like to just broaden that out quickly and harken back to what Heidi was talking about earlier, because I think, yes, we talk about reading too a lot, but so much of this is just about finding those moments during the day, whether we're in the car with our child and we're driving, to where we're not in isolation, but we're having a conversation. We're singing Wheels on the Bus. We're looking outside, pointing the stop sign at a tree. And even though those things seem maybe boring to us as adults, everything is new to your baby. So having that discussion in the car when you have a 15-minute commute somewhere, or if you're in the grocery store, if you engage your child, have them cut out a picture of carrots or zucchini before you go. They're in charge of picking that item out. There's that interactivity there. Furthermore, if you have a baby in a pumpkin seat at home and you're walking around and you think, why do I need to talk to this 2-week-old infant, it is absolutely beneficial to be telling them everything you're doing. If you're just doing laundry, we're putting the soap in. If you have a toddler, making them part of the process, saying, can you put the pants in the dryer? Can you sort the darks from the lights? So it's all about that interactivity beyond just reading to them, but engaging them and really having that, again, that serve and return during the day.
Okay, we have a number of people who want to talk to us on the phone, so let me just let's see. Sunny, are you there? This is you're on the air right
yes,
now.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Jump on in. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I heard this program and I was very intrigued, and I would like to share and again mention about the engagement process, the interaction process, and the shared experience that you have is so very important. It brings me back to my childhood, because one of the things that was not mentioned was the touch, you know, the sensory stimulation, the massage. I was massaged my first year of my life, and then consecutively throughout by my mother and also by my grandmother. And those things are very, very important in early childhood, the first 5 years of your life, because you have this emotional support and this centeredness and the connection. The connection word was also used, and I'm very much with it. I would not be this wholesome person right now, and I'm a psychotherapist. So I have been 36 years in my life doing helping others. So I wanted to really mention, and that was my observation, is the sensory stimulation and the massage process, the touching. Just even if it is just petting on the back, you know, within the laws and the means, you know, because you have to be very loving and constructive and have a positive outcome towards the child. So just wanted to say that caregiving process is so important. I really appreciate you allowing me to share my experiences, and that is the sense of touch and sensory stimulation. Okay. The first 6 years of life is very important.
Okay. Thank you, Sunny. We appreciate the call. You take care. Have a great day, and I'm glad you could share that information.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's see. David from Paso Robles. David, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I just wanted to offer a similar type of testimonial. I was a father for the first time at 36, some 30 years ago, and I had the good fortune of taking a couple child psychology courses before I became a parent, so I had some understanding of what is being discussed today. And as I would take my daughter with me out to give my wife some time alone, I found myself in kind of an awkward position initially, and then I just started talking to her. And I would tell her how I met her mother and how much she was wanted and what we were doing and what our hopes and aspirations were, a lot of what your guests are suggesting. And then when I ran out of things to say, I'd start to say them all over again.
Repetition is good, yes.
Love it. Wow, best dad ever.
Yeah, we do that in radio. We reboot the program about every 15 minutes so people will know where we were.
And I want to tell you that we raised a wonderful daughter who was very sharp, and I'm not surprised to hear what your guests are saying because I believe it from my own firsthand experience.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call.
Sure thing. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Is, to some extent, and as he was saying that, is I guess we're sort of being, we're tour guides for our kids, for our grandchildren.
We are their first teachers, okay. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Just, yeah, and I think
we're going to this store, we're doing this, we're doing that, why we're doing it, what we'll see today.
Mm-hmm. And I think what Sunny and David are both saying is kind of speaking to the point of where technology can't fill in for that personal interactive touch and that ability to really cater those moments to your child in a way that technology really can't. There, when David was talking about sharing stories about meeting the mother or being able to have those conversations, even with a young baby who may not seem like they're responding, he's creating a bond with that child and a language for that child that's really unique to their relationship. That's like Heidi was saying earlier, a bond of love that's connected to language.
And I would say to kind of echo also what Sunny said, there's a specific program in our county called Raising a Reader, for instance, where it's a book cuddling program. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially that. So you're really incorporating that bonding attachment element in with reading. And it becomes so important to these families who, you know, their testimonials prove by saying, hey, this became a ritual in our family. We did this every night and we're sharing positive experiences and it became a favorite thing. And these children look forward to getting their books every week, graduating from the program, getting their free library card. But more than that, it's become a family ritual and experience, which is such an inclusive way to come about the talk, read, sing aspect of our little ones.
So, Heidi, I want to shift to you because we all talk. We're all talking now. Mm-hmm. Most of us, I mean, I'm reading notes that I have in order to figure out where we are in the program and what we're talking about. It seems like singing and music needs to have more of a more of a direct handshake, more of a desire and a decision to actually participate, to integrate that into what we're talking about. And how have you addressed that?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure. I hear what you're saying. It does take that maybe another level of outreach or finding some music that you like. But also, if you watch kids, they often just sing their life, too. So the idea of kind of narrating your day came up in terms of parents sharing that with kids. But kids often naturally do that. I'm getting a cookie, you know, that kind of thing. I think that singing comes pretty naturally for humans in general. But what doesn't always come naturally, and you brought this up, is that comfort level on adults to share. And so so that can be, I think, one of the main barriers. But the library has a lot of CDs, right, the last time I was there, which was a while ago.
Yeah, definitely.
When my kids were younger, that you can obviously check out and listen to. There's a lot of things on satellite radio. So all these things are pretty easy to incorporate. Obviously, Boo Boo Records has a lot of wonderful CDs that folks can buy. So, and you probably should, you know, you should buy a nice selection of CDs to have them around because, as we all know, kids are going to want to listen to those same songs over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. So you do have to maybe make a little bit of an effort to bring some of that music in your life, but it's pretty minimal. The bar is pretty low in terms of making that happen. And it's so much fun, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. I, you know, I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. It's so much fun, and I think it allows parents. I'm pretty comfortable being silly. Silly is kind of my deal, but it's not for all adults, right? Or it used to be, but we've lost that along the way. And I think if you can you know, allow yourself to be open to bringing in music. It might tap into that part that you maybe shut down a little bit, and allow you to be silly a little bit too.
My 31-year-old daughter now will say that probably one of the words that she remembers most is the fact that she would call me ridiculous. One of the first words she learned that was rather long was "Daddy's being ridiculous." So it became a way to look at that. And I think song became a factor with that too. Yeah, I think back, I would indeed sing in the house to my child.
Yeah,
but I only would sing in the house to my child until she was old enough to say to somebody, "Oh, Daddy was singing again today," and I stopped singing.
Wheels on the Bus, which already came up. Yeah. Like all these traditional songs that you would think of. So folks that are listening might be thinking, oh, I get it. I need to go get a bunch of CDs that maybe have songs that my kid will love, but I won't, right? Mm. And yes, that is what I'm saying you should do. And though, there are so many musicians and music groups that you would know and love and are coming from more of an adult music sort of space that have made their own children's CDs. Oh, and also, there's so much great music out there that isn't necessarily just for kids, but it's so great in and of itself, too, that you don't have to listen to things that are specifically kid-related. There's a lot of international music, for example, or just all kinds of great, you know, soundtracks that you love, like the Sound of Music soundtrack, for example, that as an adult you might remember from your own childhood that you can have on and sing. I mean, how fun is that? Come on.
I'll confess, I actually like the soundtrack from Curious George. And it is in my CD player, and there are no children currently living in my house.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Not to be embarrassed. That's a good one.
Yeah. As we incorporate music, can we incorporate that connected specifically to reading Heidi's focus is on music, and that and that's wonderful, and that's what I enjoy. Obviously, I enjoy listening to music more than I enjoy listening to myself talk. But I'm wondering how we incorporate that into other ways that bring parents into the process, because I'm one of those parents, like a little, I mean, I made fun of it, but to some extent, yeah, about the time that my daughter could understand that I could not carry a tune was the time at which to stop singing to her. But I didn't stop talking to her. I didn't stop reading to her. So I'm wondering how we integrate all of these together.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that Heidi and I both have some programs that we could suggest. For example, at the library, we have story times that are based for babies and toddlers on Monday at 10:30 in Atascadero, on Tuesdays in San Luis and Arroyo Grande, and again on Friday in Atascadero. And Heidi runs an amazing program on Wednesdays at Boo Boo Records. So it's not just about finding your way on your own. There is scaffolding in the community to support you. So if you are like, I don't remember any of my songs from when I was a kid, then come on in. You can relearn them. You don't have to be alone. And also, another big part of this is that in the same way that we need to sing with our children and talk with our children, it also gives parents or grandparents an opportunity to sing and talk with other adults too. So let's not forget that parenthood is not a journey alone where you have to figure this all out. We have a strong community here that is here to support parents who are not sure how to find their way.
Anyway, Heidi, I want to get back to what you do at Boo Boo, but I want to make sure our caller doesn't wait too long. So remind me, we'll get back to that.
Okay.
And that's Hannah from Atascadero. Are you there, Hannah?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you're part of the discussion. Jump on in.
Great. Heidi and the others there, it almost feels like a perfect segue. I'm a music therapist in the area, and I run different mommy and me type music groups affiliated with Arts for Living, who is an affiliate of United Cerebral Palsy. And I don't have currently one in the works, but I just wanted to, just reinforce that fact that parents, especially in our Western culture, sometimes get nervous, sometimes don't feel like they can sing or want to sing, and just having them come around and join a group of others, you know, being silly together, being embarrassed together, that's kind of what I love to provide. And Heidi, it sounds like you do too. There are people out in the community scaffolding. The last group I run was in Templeton last fall, so I'm in the works to kind of planning another one maybe going on this fall.
Okay, great. Thanks for the call.
And caregivers,
take
too.
Care. Bye-bye. Yeah, the folks from Arts from Living have been on the program before. We've interviewed them.
Cool.
They've got a great program working with all kinds of different music groups, from focused, serious music to lighthearted, just goofing around, drumming, and having a great time. They do some wonderful programs. Heidi, what do you do Wednesdays at Boo Boo Records?
So every Wednesday for the last almost 20 years, we meet at 10:15. People generally get there right at 10, though, because it's pretty popular at this point. And we sing together, and I would describe it more as music and movement. So we don't just sing. We stand up. We use hand gestures. We do all those things together. And we do it to CDs. So I'm not there with a guitar. I'm definitely not Julie Andrews from Sound of Music. Although, as I'm saying that, I'm really sad about that. I think I'm going to have to work on that. So that really helps, you know, in terms of comfort level with your own singing voice. Mm-hmm. So if you have a CD with you, behind you in the car, wherever you are at home, to me, that really makes me anyway feel significantly more comfortable. So our program is a half an hour long. It's every Wednesday, as I said, at 10:15 at Boo Boo Records. And it's been going for a couple decades already. So I think I have maybe at least one student that is now back as a mom, which is great.
So people bring their children, but the people who don't have children can come and participate too, or is it mostly for parents and children?
It's really for parents of preschool age children.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would say 5 and under. And yes, bring your newborn. People sometimes wonder, is my baby too little? And that's, you know, all within your own comfort zone. But absolutely, we know that, you know, children in the womb are definitely impacted by music. And so there's no reason not to bring them right away. It is, you know, it's a loud situation. So some children can be overwhelmed. But what I notice is a lot of kids, and sometimes the parents share with me, oh, I'm sorry my kid doesn't participate. As soon as they get home, though, they start singing and dancing around. If I play that CD at home, they do all the moves and all of that. And I always say, you know, this isn't, you know, it's not about making sure that they're performing in this group. A lot of kids are in that observation mode, and you can see they are really watching. They're really paying attention. And what I've seen happen over and over again is that those kids that are seemingly not participating, that are sitting in their parents' lap, they're not moving, they're not even singing, it often just seems like a switch. So from one music time to the next, they go from that place of seemingly non-participation and observation to they're on the stage next to me doing all the moves and singing all the words. And so they're definitely getting it. They're participating in their own way. So there's no wrong way to do it. So I would again speak to that it's okay to be singing. And if your kid's not singing, that doesn't mean that they're not really getting a lot out of it too.
And I think that's another kind of fallacy with this young age of 0 to 3 is that they have to be sitting quietly and rapt attention or singing every word along with you or sitting still for the book. But that is not where these kids are at. When kids are between the ages of 0 to 3, they're not really in the same mode as an adult would be at a concert or reading a book. They are learning by moving. They're learning by crawling around, by grabbing stuff, by touching stuff. But that doesn't mean that they're not absorbing all of this at the same time. So I think that that's really important for parents to know, is just because your kid is not sitting in rapt attention doesn't mean that it's not impacting them in a really positive, meaningful way.
And I would just want to speak to that, too, because I think one of the things that we get hung up on as adults, again, is it has to be structured and it has to be formal. But you just need to be silly and present, really. And, you know, and sometimes those unstructured moments are the ones that are the most memorable. I love hearing about these particular programs in our community and all of them. And I do want to say on behalf of First Five and the Talk, Read, Sing campaign, we are looking for people in the community who are doing things like this and want to hear from them. We are currently doing some profiles of the different initiatives that are going on in our area to give people in the community a better taste of what is out there, the resources that they have in terms of Talk, Read, Sing for their children. And we would love for them to visit our website for all of the tangible toolkits that we have for parents and caregivers. But we would love to hear from them and engage them and talk with them and have that dialogue about how we can all play a part in making or creating space for Talk, Read, Sing in our daily lives with our children.
Okay, so give us the website.
It's firstfiveslow.org. Yeah.
Well, it's readily available. If you put in First Five is such a predominant program now that if you put in just First Five on a Google search, you'll find First Five.
And we do have a Talk, Read, Sing tab, and we are adding materials to it daily. But we always love to hear from people about what they're doing and how we might even beef that up with more content that is in our community and available as far as resources for families.
Okay, there's some. This comes from some information that you sent me as a preparation for the program, and it's kind of in the very disturbing, but we need to talk about it area. It basically says for children up to the age of 4 in middle income and upper income households, those children are likely to have experienced 30 million more words than a lower income child is. Yeah. How do we address that? And what's going on? I mean, because I mean, talking is free, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, there's reading material available all over. You pick up and read your child one of the free newspapers. There's things everywhere. So I don't know how economic standing would have that much of a pronounced effect.
Well, it's interesting. So that study, it was a 1995 study that was done by Betty Hart and Todd Reesley. And in that study, they actually put microphones in families' homes. And they studied a lot of people. And what they were looking at is not just the quantity of words, but the quality of interaction. So what they found is not only do higher income families have more conversational, or what Misty was saying, back and forth, volley and return type of conversations, but also that they were just speaking more in general. So what they found was, like, in a lower income family, you might have a parent say, "Put on your shoes," whereas a higher income family might say, "Oh, it's time for us to go out. What do we need to do next? Let's go get your shoes. Okay, I'm going to tie up your laces." So there was a more back and forth with the conversation. So it wasn't just the quantity of words, but actually the quality of the interaction that was associated with those words, which tended to have more diverse vocabulary.
More complex sentences.
More back and forth. Yeah. So it's not just an income thing, though. I mean, sometimes it can be a cultural thing. Sometimes it can be how you were raised. I think an interesting thing about singing is that it actually tends to be more of a cultural universal that people sing to their babies around the world, even more than they talk to their babies. I think that actually is more of a universal thing, that people will naturally sing lullabies or sing songs that were taught to them as they were children. And that tends to be a more worldwide thing than the conversational thing with young children. Well, I think having conversations with young children is kind of maybe even a new concept, even in our own country, and definitely not a universal by any means.
Is there a way to overcome the deficiency you're talking about in some households as far as not enough language being expressed?
Yeah, again, I think it has to do with the scaffolding. One of the great things about this Talk, Read, Sing program is that it's going to really try and give ideas to families of what kind of conversations that they could have. Talk about your day, talk about your feelings, talk about what's outside your window, talk about your clothing. So I think a big part of this is actually giving people the language to have those conversations. Like Heidi was saying, go to your library, look for CDs to find out music, to give yourself kind of a basis of what you can do. It's not always a natural thing for families to know how to do this with their young children.
Well, and the other thing I would want to talk about is raising the minimum wage, right? Because I feel like a lot of these families, the reason, I mean, to some extent, so when I hear someone say the difference is, like, get on your shoes, we're going, and this longer, more conversational question, you know, that reminds me that these are folks, to a large extent, that are probably working two jobs or more. Parents mm-hmm. both working, not at home like some folks can afford to do. All those things, all those extra pressures on lower income families, you know, it just makes the time, doesn't create the time and the space, and even the psychological space, probably the energy, you know, to take those extra moments. So, you know, I would love to see, you know, when we talk about how we can support family in early literacy, there's some bigger, maybe economic issues too that need to be addressed too by our society.
I would just like to say I think we are seeing a lot of collaboration in the community toward that. You know, when you look at Raising a Reader, which is targeted more toward lower income families, when you mm-hmm. look at United Way's Born Learning program, which is very much similar to Talk, Read, Sing, even with First Five, we have two school readiness sites in Oceano and Paso Robles where we have a literature hour, and what that really involves is just bringing families in and making it a family affair when we come to the issue of talking and reading and seeing with our kids, and making it more of a community type of feeling environment when we're doing those things.
Yeah. I don't know if they still do it. One of the, I'm not sure if it was district-wide or just a particular school in Paso Robles. They were dealing with English as second language families and things like that. And they actually have an incentive program. If you read to your child or if you read homework with your child in elementary school or whatever they were working on in elementary school, you got some kind of incentive. And at the end of the school year, there were some things for the children and the parents to do together. I don't know if it's a program that still is going on in Paso Robles or not.
Well, the public library this summer actually has a program for parents of babies and toddlers, where they can go in the library and get ideas of things to do with their children. And by doing 10 of the early literacy activities, like sing Itsy Bitsy Spider together or talk about your day or build with blocks, they can get free board books. So that's something that the public library is trying to do to support that. And again, also offering the ideas of what types of things to do, because I think even the most educated parent still sometimes might struggle for things to do on a day-to-day basis because you are busy and you do have stuff going on and maybe you feel like you've done everything 20 times before. So I think all of these community resources can help.
Yeah, and I might become preoccupied with the concept of, oh, I have to tell my child about something that's really interesting and it's really engaging and it's not just, oh, by the way, did you see that there's some funny thing, funny wallpaper on this office we're sitting in right now?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, it could just be like, this is your nose, here's your foot. I mean, those kind of things are still important.
And research has shown, too, that kids really like specific questions. So if your child's in the back of the seat and you say, how was your day, that's much different than, did you have a grilled cheese sandwich for lunch? Or what game play on recess? Yeah. Really taking them to a specific memory in their mind. And the other thing you can do is also bring up past experiences, because that really does enhance memory. Or if you want to try to instill planning and thinking skills, you talk about what's coming up. We're going to the farmer's market next. Let's talk about what you want to pick out while we're there. Mm-hmm. So being very specific in your questions, I think, is where the conversations really start to happen.
Mm-hmm. And as your kids get older, once you've established that, I have found that car conversations are very meaningful and powerful. I don't know if there's any science to support the gender divide that I've seen, but I feel like if you have a boy child in the back seat of the car, you can end up having a really nice conversation with him when you're driving and not, you know, staring at him. I think they can feel kind of, you know, under attack sometimes when we're asking them, how was your day? What did you do? Blah, blah, blah. It can be really produce a really meaningful conversation. So that's a little bit later in life, you know, after the first 5 years. But when you establish that foundation of conversations, having an open dialogue, asking those really good pointed questions, that can really be beneficial when they're, you know, when they're older, especially in their teenage years.
So at what age do we start getting some cues? I think Heidi's hitting on this. She basically is talking about what may be engaging or what may be a better engaging environment for a certain child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
When do we start getting cues that we should really pay attention to? Obviously, my 5-month-year-old grandchild is not telling me, I really think that Dostoevsky is really stupid and I'd rather have Curious George, but at some point that's going to come up as, you know, I'm interested in something, I'm not interested in something.
I mean, kind of, but I bet your 5-month-old grandchild is smiling when you say hi to them, or if you play peekaboo with them, or if you say their name. Even with really young children, I mean, obviously at 1-month-old, you're maybe not getting those kind of responses that are physical responses. But again, think of it as laying the foundation under the house. It's not necessarily something we're going to see until we start building up later on. So really what we're talking about is laying that foundation, not always looking for a physical response for some of these activities, because what we're doing is getting it ready for later on in life. We're not expecting your baby to read. We're not even expecting them to sing the songs necessarily along with you, but they're learning all of those things at the same time. And you'd be surprised how much response you get from children when they don't like something. They cry, right? If they don't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably are getting responses.
You don't get an understanding as to what they're crying about, but they're not happy about something. Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I remember I was playing George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars to one of my kids, and they just started bawling. And I'm like, really? Come on. This is awesome.
Wow.
They did not like it. And they let me know. Like, they were bawling in the back of the car. So you will get a response.
And, you know, to take what you just said, Margaret, we do start seeing the impact later of what we are doing with our children when we get to those third grade reading levels, because in California California, 37% of third graders were reading to level in 2015. And third grade reading is a clear indication and linked to long-term success in school. We are in San Luis Obispo County are at 41%, but I think the national average is about 34%. So that's still really low. So what is the indication of whether you're going to have somebody hitting their third grade reading level is going to be whether we're talking and reading and singing in those preschool years, and what's going to determine whether we are talking and reading and singing to our preschool level children is whether we're singing or we're talking to our babies out of the womb. So it starts from birth.
Yeah. Is there okay? That's a good statistic to work with. Is there any examination of communities where it's remarkably high and what they may be doing differently?
Yes, there are. It's interesting because we did a program.
Raising of America,
where they actually looked at high quality preschool and then early Head Start programs, and they looked at the long term effects of having really great adult interaction that's focused around reading, singing, talking, playing, and the long term effects are indisputable. They can look at these children and see what they look like 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and they are more successful in their academics and also have a lot better success sometimes in their personal lives as well, because so much of what we do in life revolves around being literate. It's very hard to be successful in this country without being literate, and all of this is just getting ready for things that we'll build later on in life. I told Misty earlier, we're not expecting babies to read, okay? So don't expect your baby, don't buy the kit that says your baby will read by the time they're one. That's not what we're talking about.
Is there a kit that says your baby will read?
There is a lot of products, there's a lot of apps that people are trying to sell you to get ready to make your baby smarter or make them more successful. But really the best thing you can do is have that personal interaction of singing to them, talking to them, reading to them, playing with them.
We haven't talked about instrumental music. We've talked about singing. So is that something that you can integrate into getting children more interested in singing if they're also hearing non-singing music?
Well, sure, and you all might have some studies that support this too, but it doesn't just benefit singing, but it has a lot of cognitive benefits in and of itself, just instrumental music. So you don't have to have the language in there to get so-called measurable benefits. I think that there's implications in terms of math processing and understanding and all kinds of things. Remember, there was a whole sort of decade at least of Mozart for babies and that sort of thing. And I don't know if there was anything behind that. That was a long time ago.
Baby Einstein?
Yeah, so... No. Okay. We're getting a thumbs down on that.
Yeah, Baby Einstein was actually totally debunked. Right. There was no academics behind it. But Mozart for babies is a different thing. I mean, playing music and then expecting babies to learn from classical music. I don't know the science behind it. It would be interesting to know.
Well, and I think that all of it, too, isn't so much... I mean, we're talking about measurable benefits with the literacy and all of that, and that's the hope of this program and the intention of this program. But... also, too, like all of these things are just really great, fun ways to be in a family and to be with your kids. And I know time pressure is a big reason a lot of this isn't happening. And I would just speak to that and say, you're going to spend the time. And it's all a matter of when you're going to spend it. So if you don't spend it in the upfront, and I don't mean this in a judgmental way because I recognize that a lot of families, as I said, are working several jobs. It's really challenging. And though you're going to spend the time. So you're either going to spend it, you know, when your kids are young, kind of doing this sort of upfront work, which can be very time consuming, but it's basically like putting a huge deposit in your kid's bank account. Or you're going to be doing it later oftentimes, you know, having extra time challenges with homework, you know, all these sort of even emotional challenges and things like that, if you don't lay that layer down of not only literacy, but love and connection. So I personally would rather, you know, do the upfront work.
And I think so much of this can happen, again, in those mundane moments of our lives. You know, when we're changing our baby, when we're getting them dressed, when we're eating, when we're going to the grocery, when we're going through a car wash. Mm-hmm. These are the opportunities that we have while we are together, regardless of how many times during the day we're pulled apart, to really recognize that and celebrate it and make sure that we're not in isolation. And that is challenging with technology today as well.
I'm surprised, as you were both talking, I'm surprised the number of people in a supermarket with a small child who are not talking to that child. Because it occurred to me, even if I say, oh, gee, we're going to get Raisin Bran today because I like Raisin Bran and here's why I like the raisins in it and things like this. And those are conversations that are not going on with little kids.
Yeah, and
I'm sorry. Conversation may have been a bad word. And yeah. Not expecting the infant to be, I'll have a conversation with it, but I'm talking to the child about life around us.
Daily experiences.
Yeah, and I think that kind of speaks to Misty's point that it doesn't have to be all day, every day. I mean, so many of us are working parents and we're not with our child all day, but they can be in these quiet moments, going to the grocery store or getting dressed or even driving around in the car. And also, a lot of it just takes practice. You know, a lot of it just requires you to have a moment when you think, oh, I'm in the grocery store with my baby. I'm going to tell him I'm buying broccoli. Like, it doesn't have to be something, again, that's life-altering at every moment. It can be in those quiet, mundane moments. But it does take a little practice. It just you need to be kind of cognizant of those moments. And for some parents, again, it just requires a little bit of reminders. And again, Talk Read Sing is kind of putting out those things like bulletin boards or commercials where they're just kind of reminding parents, hey, take a moment.
I mean, I think we do need environmental prompts sometimes because we are all decompressing at the end of our days. We are, as I said earlier, sometimes in isolation with our technological gadgets. And we have to remember that children want to be participants. They want to be helpers. So we need to engage them when we're taking them along with us, even on the most simple of tasks.
Mm-hmm. And the technology is something we haven't really talked about that much today, but that to me is a huge concern in this conversation that you often see at the market, actually, or are all over the place. Even a small child, a baby with some kind of device. And then you often will look and see the parent, too, is engaging with their device. And, you know, it looks like something from like a dystopic future almost, you know. And and again, I would just, remind folks that you're going to spend the time somewhere. So and maybe what that brings up is, you know, parenting is really challenging. Sometimes parents feel really isolated. You had mentioned about, you know, joining other programs where you connect with other parents. So again, all of this isn't necessarily about just you and your baby either. So maybe it's more comfortable for you and more fun to meet up with other parents and other babies and have more engagement in that sense too. But I would really caution parents around technology and see, you know, how much they can limit it from their own lives
and how the community can help.
So Heidi, what I need to do is make sure that you're nearby when someone says to me, "Why are you talking to my child in the supermarket?"
Uh-huh.
The answer is, well, you're here with your child, so at least your child is safe in it. I talk to kids all the time, but people look at you kind of like, okay, there's this person talking.
And I think, too, to harken back to that, yes, we look at it in terms of ourselves and this enormous pressure to be doing good parenting, but I think everybody has a place in this Talk, Read, Sing campaign. When you look at the community, I can call out Bellamundo Cafe, for instance. They have a quiet space, no laptops, no devices. This is for community conversation. You can walk into other coffee shops where they have a play area, a quiet read area for moms and parents and dads with their children. So we really applaud that and want to try to highlight those in our community too, because I think it does take a village to really to make this work.
Okay. We have only a few minutes left. I'm going to get everybody gets a chance to kind of talk about the stuff I didn't let you talk about yet. So, Margaret, I'm going to start with you.
Okay. Hi. Once again, I'm Margaret Kenzinger-Klopfer. I'm from the San Luis County Library. And we're just here to encourage parents to talk, read, sing, and play with their young children, 0 to 3. It's never too early to start. Feel free to drop into the library anytime for one of our toddler programs, to get book ideas, to get music, and all kinds of parent interaction. And again, you don't have to be an expert to have a great interaction with your child.
And you don't have to have a library card, and library cards are free anyway.
Library cards are free. You don't have to have a library card, but you could.
Heidi.
And so this is Heidi Harmon, and I have a program at Boo Boo Records just called Music Time. It's at 10:15 every Wednesday. I'd encourage you to get there a few minutes early to get a good spot. And we've been doing this for about 20 years. We sing and we dance and we have a great time for about a half an hour every Wednesday. We pretty much do the same thing every time. We do a lot of repetition, so it takes kids a few times to get the moves and the words, but they always do. And it's a great program not only to bring your kid to sing, but to meet other parents in the community with kids your child's age.
Misty, check in there.
I'm Misty. I'm with First Five San Luis Obispo County, and we are an advocate and funder for programs that help 0 through 5-year-olds and their families get ready and healthy for school. And I do want to give you a little background about what we are talking about. First Five California launched the Talk, Read, Sing campaign about a year and a half ago, and a lot of counties have modeled it. And we really wanted to tailor it to our local level. So it started with environmental prompts in the way of radio ads, movie theater ads, billboards, television spots, down to almost bumper sticker-like marketing materials. And you will find much of that on our website. We are looking to engage with partners, and we're really excited here, for instance, to be working with Heidi and Margaret and so many other initiatives that are similar and in the spirit of Talk, Read, Sing. So we invite people to visit our website to let us know if you have something going on, and also get in contact with us, because we are printing up as we speak clings that are, we're a Talk, Read, Sing family, we're a Talk, Read, Sing community partner, and we want you to put those in your window and let us know what you're doing to really help boost early literacy.
Okay. All of you were briefer than I expected you to be.
So we didn't sing.
That's fine. But no, wait. Before we get it, because I do have a key question that occurred to me. I don't think we've really addressed it. And if we did address it, and I don't remember that, I'm sorry. There's lots of us. Okay. In my case, I have one small grandchild. My other grandkids are like in their 20s, and they think I'm just crazy. But the infant in the family lives two and a half hours away, so don't see her as often as we'd like. There are a lot of people who are like me, who either their children are grown, or they don't have children, or they don't have small children or grandchildren. What can people like that do to get involved in programs? There used to be, I don't know if they still do it, a lot of the schools would allow people to basically sign up after they go through a background check to basically come to classrooms and read. I don't know if there's a program at which people can come and read at the library to other children. Are there any programs like that to engage those people who are not engaged because they don't have children?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that there are a lot of opportunities for people to volunteer if they don't have their own children. And not just on an organizational level, but even on a one-on-one basis, you'll see that there's groups like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, where people can connect with younger children. They even have programs where you can go and cuddle babies that are just born at the hospital in Sierra Vista, and you can sing to them there. So I think there are a lot of opportunities for people to connect with young children. Also, in some ways, that's one nice thing about technology. Even if you live 2.5 hours away from your granddaughter, you can use something like FaceTime to sing songs with her or read stories to her. I had talked to a lot of grandparents who have their kids get a book from the library, they get a matching book from our library, and then they read the books together to their grandchildren. So in some ways, technology has also made it easier for us to connect to those loved ones that are farther away.
Okay, someone said something about you wanted to sing. Or what was
I think you mentioned that.
No, I did not. No, it was not me. I did not say that. Okay. Anyway.
We're happy to sing, even if we're out of tune. Don't feel like you have to be Aretha Franklin to sing to a baby. They won't know that you're a bad singer. It's okay.
Yeah. It's a great topic. I'm delighted that we have these programs like this in our county, and I'm delighted with First Five, which is a statewide program. So there's First Five in all the counties.
Correct.
And it's available to everybody. And I appreciate all you're doing. Heidi, I appreciate the fact that that people can just show up at Boo Boo Records on Wednesday and sing with their child.
Yeah, it's a fun program. It's great. Yeah, come on down. We're there every Wednesday.
And it's close to the library, so you can leave from there and go.
You can walk to the library.
That's right.
Downtown, yeah.
And the library's website is slolibrary.org, so you can look on our event calendar to find out the toddler and baby story times at a library near you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. This is Central Coast Voices, and we've had a wonderful time talking today, and I want to remind you that Central Coast Voices is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, which is an arm of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. We publish a report called Vital Signs every 3 years. The new report will be coming out in December. It'll give you a snapshot of what's going on in San Luis County, both economically, socially, and from an overall well-being standpoint. You can find that report, the old reports, and the new upcoming report will be at actionslo.org. Next week, Chris Kington Barker, she will be with you, and she's speaking with Michael Spangler and his attorney, Paul Beard, and they'll be discussing the case of Spangler versus the city of Pismo Beach and the often contentious legal battles that develop about property rights and open space preservation. It should be a fascinating program. There'll be other guests joining them, but we don't know at this point who those are. As I've said to you before, this is a production of Community Action for Healthy Communities, which is part of the Community Foundation. I want to also thank Joan Gellert Sargent, sorry about that, who is underwriting this program and continues to support public radio and our efforts to get the word out to you. You can reach Central Coast Voices at voices@kcbx.org or 543-2323. I want to thank KCBX for supporting us and supporting this kind of programming as a community activity. And thank you to my guests, Misty, Margaret, and Heidi today. And next up is This American Life. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us today.
This is KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara. We're streaming at kcbx.org. Support comes from Festival Mosaic, presenting The Other Mozart, a one-woman show about Mozart's sister, featuring historic and new music on Tuesday, July 19th at Cuesta Cultural and Performing Arts Center. Tickets are available at festivalmozaic.com. Up next, we've got This American Life. Thanks for listening.